This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast, presented by Allied Home Security.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Good morning. Happy Thursday to all of you. Nice to be with you. Appreciate you getting up with us. We are with you till 10 a.m. this morning. I'm Sean Pendergast. He's Seth Payne. Seth, the players are locked out in baseball. Does it feel different this morning at all to you? At all? Hello, Seth?
I'm thinking about that, whether it feels different or not.
Oh, no, gotcha.
It doesn't feel different.
Don't do
at all.
That to me again.
Other than no Astros deals were being announced, so that's not any different than the previous couple of days.
Right.
I guess just kind of under it feels different knowing that for sure now we're not going to have any Carlos Correa news for quite some time. Yeah. So under the rules of the lockout, there's not even supposed to be any negotiating or anything between players and teams. So it's not like there just won't be any official signings or anything. There's supposed to be zero actually communications between these two sides when it comes to contract negotiations. So we're not going to, at the very least, if anything does go on, wink, wink, we're not going to get any reports about it. It'll
yeah.
be kept under wraps.
Yeah, my guess is this is one of the only cities that's really feeling anything sort of acute right now about the lockout. I mean, a lot of the players and the people involved in it are making it out like it's no big deal. You know, it's December 1st. Spring training's not for another 2 or 3 months. Pitchers and catchers normally report in February. This is not a real deadline. It's just the expiration date of the CBA. But we live in a city that has Carlos Correa. So, yeah, I will miss talking about the Carlos Correa free agency cycle for a little while here.
This is where I think some people in baseball are being a little too cavalier about this. And it's that I see all over the place people saying, well, regular season games probably won't be affected. Maybe it'll eke into spring training or what have you. Like, is anybody paying attention to what's happened to the player health over the last couple of years as the schedules have been thrown into disarray over COVID? If pitchers aren't in on time, then all of a sudden pitchers are screwing up, playing on jacked up schedules. I don't need any more extra injuries on top of normal injuries anymore.
Or weird schedules. I'm tired of weird schedules. We've had weird schedules since March of 2020. It took us 2 years to get an 82 game NBA season back. It's 2 years and some weird postseasons, and football had a whole year where games are being played on Wednesday afternoons. I don't need this. I need normalcy back. So baseball players, give me my normalcy back. That's all I ask. That's all.
Yeah,
it's
just so there have been three lockouts previously that didn't lead to work stoppages.
Okay.
But a lockout's different than a strike, obviously. So I guess for whatever that's worth, the three previous lockouts didn't lead to work stoppage. I had forgotten, and part of it's because I was born in the middle of all of it. It's not like this was like in my prime baseball watching days, but how many work stoppages there were back before 1995, there'd been like eight work stoppages in the course of 11 years or so. It was just absolutely absurd. So this used to be kind of common and normal, but to us, to us, we've known nothing but labor peace in our lives and in our adult lives. It freaks me out a little bit at the prospect of another
one. Well, here's the thing. Like, until the money really exploded for TV and things like that,
yeah,
baseball players actually lived in the same neighborhood with people like us. They were union dues paying laborers just like everybody else was for a while. You know, so they had to get theirs. They had second jobs in the off season and things like that. Once it exploded to where it was millionaires versus billionaires, that's when people got detached. Now I think there was a period from like the 80s through the, you know, through the, certainly through the strike of the mid 90s where we lost the World Series, where people were just angry at one side or the other. Now I think it's almost, I don't know, maybe I'm now in my job that I'm in too close to people who are involved in the sport. I think it seems to me like fans kind of know this is part of the deal at this point. There's so much money and this is just, I don't know. I don't know if there's the animus about a work stoppage.
Yeah, but we haven't seen work stoppages, so we just don't know. That's what I'm saying is nobody's kind of primed for this. And I think that as the NFL got closer, the NFL wasn't even close to a work stoppage, and people were getting pretty worked up about it in like February of that year.
Yeah, maybe.
So I don't know. I think, Sean, so before 1995, over the course of 23 years, there were 8 work stoppages, which is, that's pretty damn frequent. Like once every 3 seasons, there was a work stoppage. And it wasn't until after you got through all of that unrest. They've negotiated 5 CBAs without a work stoppage since 1995. It just kind of builds on it to where people get comfortable and they trust that the league is going to be there and there's not going to be all this extra legal drama. I think you slip a little dose of that in there again. And if there were an actual work stoppage, I think people would actually be pretty damn worked up about it. Sean, people were getting pretty worked up about it during COVID.
We were worked up about everything. We were worked up about everything during COVID. I don't know if I can use COVID as the litmus test for emotion. You know what I mean? That period of time. But you're right.
But the disgust over the players and the owners just not being able to figure it out.
Yeah. 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 Well, and I guess you're right to that point. No. Yeah. Because I just opened up this statement. I'm looking at this statement this morning from the MLBPA. And they put out a statement last night after the lockout. Yeah, maybe you're right, Seth, because I read this in my, and I'll read the statement here. I won't read it all, but I'll just read the highlights. It says, Major League Baseball, this is from the players. Major League Baseball has announced a lockout of players, shutting down our industry. The shutdown is a dramatic measure regardless of the timing. It's not required by law or for any other reason. It's the owner's choice, plain and simple, specifically calculated to pressure players into relinquishing rights and benefits and abandoning good faith bargaining proposals that will benefit not just the players, but the game and industry as a whole. Yeah, I guess. I mean, I got worked up reading that because we're back to where it was during COVID when they were trying to figure out a 60-game season or an 80-game season or whatever it was. And both sides start putting out statements as if we're supposed to be rooting for one of you. I'm not wild about either of you. Like, I don't care who wins. I just want there to be a baseball season. Like, I don't really care. So stop trying to position it like I'm supposed to be rooting for one side or the other. Like, you're both way richer than I'll ever be. I just want baseball. That's all.
I don't know. Some of it, like one of the players' demands or requests is to raise the competitive balance tax, basically the soft salary cap that the baseball uses. And my knee-jerk reaction to that is, okay, how much do you want, players? Jeez. And then you realize, oh, they want to increase it from $210 million to $214 million and eventually $220 million. Well, that's what the owners have offered. The players want more than that. That seems like a pretty meager increase, given that everything else has expanded so much in sports. So on that one little line item issue, I'd say, all right, owners, get over yourselves. You can increase it a little bit more than that.
Yeah, there's some. We'll get into this a little later on this hour. There's and we'll do it in a way that's very easily consumable. We're not going to get into the weeds on it.
We will make it dense.
But there's some things. There are some things where the two sides seem to be very close on, and they're just haggling a little bit. And then there's some other things that are much bigger issues that, who knows, maybe they're big-time sticking points for both these sides. But at any rate, the baseball is in the midst of its 9th work stoppage. They're in the midst of a lockout. Carlos Correa is still a free agent. All right, we got to get into some Texans talk here. David Culley spoke on Justin Reed. We'll get to that. And the Texans, they did not practice at NRG Stadium yesterday. So we will hear from David Culley on the latest with Justin Reed. Is he going to be back on the field this weekend? We got a whole lot more to get to. 713-572-4610. You're listening to Payne and Pendergast.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. A-U-D-A-C-Y. Download it today.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne with you on a Thursday. So the Texans did not practice yesterday. We'll get to that in just a second. But I think the big story coming out of the game this weekend was Justin Reed being benched. David Culley had said on Monday that there would be a meeting. They would meet about Justin Reed coming back. Would there be any further punishment, whatnot, things like that. So the first we would hear from David Culley on the Justin Reed situation was yesterday. Here's what the coach had to say.
Yeah, David, you said you were going to meet with Justin Reed on Monday. Have you decided whether he'll start and play on Sunday?
He'll play on Sunday. Everything, we're moving forward. Back to business as usual.
How did that meeting go, and how do you feel that'll be?
It wasn't a meeting. We just said we're back business as usual. We're ready to go. He served his time, and we're moving on.
We texted.
I like to think that it was a meeting, and it was more along the lines of like a full blown hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And David Culley was wearing like a what are they? Is it the barrister? Are barristers lawyers in England? Whatever they do there, where the judge wears a wig and everything. I'd like to think that David Culley was sitting up there with a judge's wig on, and David Johnson and Brandon Cooks were both representing alternate sides. David Johnson representing the team, Brandon Cooks representing Justin Reed, and they had those wigs on too, and they had a full-blown trial of
yes.
the thing.
All rise.
Of course, Brandon Cooks won.
Yeah, yeah. And Culley walks in. Yeah, I like that. Well, they couldn't have done that yesterday, Seth, because Brandon Cooks and David Johnson were both sick. They were among several players who were sick. We'll get into that. The Justin Reed thing, I guess, so this is put to bed now. Are we do we talk Justin Reed anymore, or we're just moving on? Do we think that
not
there's
with any
will there be another Justin Reed type situation with this team?
I don't know. We don't even know what the hell it was, other than he and Chris Conley got in some kind of an argument in front of David Culley in a team meeting. So I would guess no. I think the message was sent that even if Justin Reed speaks up, who by the way still is a young player. There's something where along the way where all of a sudden I think people are acting like Justin Reed is some kind of, you know, elderly vet or something. He's still a young guy, and that'll be the end of that. No more blowups or outbursts.
Yeah,
I suppose.
If I had to get, you know, you're right. He's in his fourth year. If I had to guess why that is, if I'm just going to psychoanalyze the fan base, my guess is it's because he's one of the few guys who's been here longer than a year. He feels like an older player because he's one of the few Texans that was here for actually like 2 or 3 years of Bill O'Brien is my guess. But you're right. So it's Chris Conley that took issue with Justin Reed. Conley's an older player than Justin Reed. This is ripe to have something like this happen again because this team's going to keep losing. The offense is going to keep being bad. My guess is the defense is going to keep being average. And there's not a strong leader at the top of this thing. Like this is a recipe for this type of stuff.
There's not a strong leader at the top. I guess sometimes when I don't know. I wonder if Caserio and Easterby think of David Johnson as a leader on the team. and that maybe why they gave him that extra guaranteed money this year was for that reason. I only ask that not because David Johnson should be considered a leader. Usually you actually want good football players to be the leaders on your team. But sometimes front offices fall prey to this kind of thinking. They think they can import leadership or they can just shoehorn somebody into being a leader, whether they're natural leaders or not, or whether players actually, you know, respect them or not. And Jack Easterby seems like that kind of guy to me. So, whenever you're supposed leaders or people who are shoehorned into that type of situation, there isn't genuine leadership on the team.
Yeah.
Now, Tyrod Taylor, I believe, is a natural leader. But it's also hard. Sometimes quarterbacks can't be locker room leaders typically the same way people might think they are, just because they kind of have to hold themselves above the fray in a lot of ways, and they've also just got a whole different set of intellectual challenges with getting ready for a game. So there's really only so much a quarterback sometimes can do, especially in a situation like Tyrod Taylor's. So you're correct. I'm just saying all that to tell you, yeah, you're correct. There's no, it doesn't seem like there's real leadership on that team.
Yeah, no, for storyline standpoints, do I want some more of this Justin Reed stuff to happen? Sure, why not? It gave us something to talk about in a 2-9 season for a few days, but it's not good. It's not for whatever they're trying to build behind the scenes. I don't think it's good. The Colts are the opponent this weekend, and so David Culley started in on the Colts yesterday. The big story with the Indianapolis Colts this season has been the rise of Jonathan Taylor, the second-year running back out of Wisconsin, who, I'll let David Culley cite the stat that is the key stat going into the game this weekend.
We saw a stat this morning that when he rushes for 100 yards this year, they've won every game. When he hasn't rushed for 100 yards, they've lost. So, obviously, it's very important for our defense to have gap control, especially run gap control, stay in our gaps more so than any time this year. Not that it's not as important as always, but obviously this guy is playing very well right now. Their offense is playing very well. They're running the ball very well. Carson's doing very well at the quarterback position. He's having a great year, and they're doing a very good job right now.
All right. So, Seth, my wish list for this weekend for the game against the Colts, my first wish is that the Texans win. That's always my first wish. My first wish is that they win, but if they have to lose, you know how I am now. I want them to lose in a way where David Culley has to acknowledge statistics that don't line up with his narrative. So what? What I want to have happen is if they don't win, I want them to lose 41-3 and have Jonathan Taylor rush for 101 yards. And when he's asked after the game, "Coach, what went wrong?" Well, we gave up 100 yards to Jonathan Taylor. They always win when that happens. Yeah, but coach, you scored 3 points and you get what? No, Jonathan Taylor, 100 yards. So anyways, Jonathan Taylor, really, really good. And Jonathan Taylor picked one pick after Ross Blacklock in 2020.
I don't like that David Culley used the old tired stat of, hey, when a team has a whole lot of rushing yards, they win the game. Like, without acknowledging that, yeah, and a lot of times that happens because they're running the ball so much because they already have a lead in the second half.
Yeah.
Now, with the Colts, it's substantial and it matters because Jonathan Taylor is very good. Frank Reich took some heat for not running Jonathan Taylor enough in that game. At one point in the second half, the Colts had passed like 18 times to one run.
Just to be clear, the game you're talking about is not the Texans' first game against them, the Tampa Bay game this weekend, right? This past weekend? The
Colts. Didn't I say Colts Bucks?
You didn't say anybody. That's why you said in the one thing
Frank Reich said in the
game, you didn't say which game it was. That's why, yeah.
Oh, okay, sorry. In the Colts Bucks game.
Yeah, okay.
So in the Colts Bucks game, Jonathan Taylor hadn't run much at all, and the Frank Reich took some heat for that. The thing about that was that the Colts were moving the ball pretty well without Jonathan Taylor running versus a really, really good run defense in the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Yep.
And I think the strategy was just fine. They just had some self-inflicted wounds as they got down into the red zone or into the Bucs territory. Carson Wentz turned the ball over once. Somebody else had a turnover. There's a special teams error. So I think that Frank Reich knows what he's doing, and they did end up running the ball in the fourth quarter really effectively versus the Bucs. So it's not as simple as, hey, if you just shut down Jonathan Taylor, then everything will be fine. Because they've shown that they can be perfectly capable. Because if you try to if you try to shut down Jonathan Taylor, you have to expend a lot of resources to do it. And Carson Wentz is still a good enough quarterback to tarry up that way, especially because I don't know if people in Houston have realized this over the past 20 years, but T.Y. Hilton tends to have success.
I don't even know if T.Y. Hilton, if I remember, he played pretty decently in the first game this season against the Texans, then went out with an injury, I'm recalling correctly. But yeah, he always finds a way to get his against the Texans. So, and Carson Wentz has not been bad this year. Carson Wentz has been good. He's protected the football, which is very un-Wentzian. So, this will be interesting. Battle Red Day on Sunday. Between the Colts and the Texans at NRG Stadium, a game you can hear right here on Sports Radio 610, kickoff at noon.
He went, he had four receptions for 80 yards in October, and then he got injured.
He got banged up. Yep. All right, there is a lockout in Major League Baseball. If you woke up this morning and it felt different, that's probably what it is. What does the lockout mean now for Carlos Correa, and who are the teams that have been reaching out to him? There's a couple kind of surprising ones on a list here that Mark Berman reported last night. We'll get to that next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, we'll get into the issues that are causing the work stoppage in baseball here in just a second. What does it mean for Carlos Correa? That's the story we've been following during the season, since he didn't sign an extension with the Astros before last season. Carlos Correa, Seth, if I'm looking at the shopping list here, it's basically down to Carlos Correa, Trevor Story, and Freddie Freeman as the big free agents left. Marcus Stroman went off the board yesterday. Chris Taylor went off the board yesterday. We know Corey Seager and Javi Baez and Marcus Semien have all gone off the board as middle infielders. So what does this mean for Carlos Correa? For what it's worth, here's the list that Berman tweeted out last night. Mark Berman of Fox 26 tweeted out last night that the Yankees, Red Sox, Dodgers, Cubs, and Braves are all teams that have reached out to Carlos Correa's representation. That doesn't mean they made offers. It just means they've reached out to check the temperature on Correa's free agency. I would say of all those, by far the most surprising one to me is Atlanta reaching out to Carlos Correa. That's not a team we'd heard in the Carlos Correa sweepstakes until Berman tweeted that last night, right?
No, that's not at all. So that's interesting. The Cubs are interesting. I mean, they just signed Marcus Stroman to a deal right before the CBA expired. So the Cubs are definitely in the mood to make moves. The Braves have their own drama with Freddie Freeman. I think a lot of people are expecting Freddie Freeman to just re-sign with the Braves, which might be driving his price down. If other teams feel like, well, you're just using us as a way to, you know, drive the price up to the Braves, we're not actually all that interested in you. But we won't find out until after the lockout is over. There's no negotiating or anything allowed technically until after the lockout. So this is what's interesting to me, Sean.
Mm-hmm.
What if the lockout goes 3 months, then everybody else can report to spring training. But then all of a sudden, the guys like Freddie Freeman and Carlos Correa are still out there as free agents. So you might not actually see Carlos Correa sign a new deal or get a new deal until right before the season begins. And that's if everything goes well. If the lockout only goes a couple months and they get it all back together. But it's just buckle up for a long drought here of Carlos Correa news.
Yeah, I would say so. Now, just to go back to what you just said there, did you read somewhere that spring training would take place even amidst the lockout? Because if I remember back, I'm using football as the example. If you remember when there was a lockout in football, there was no OTAs, you weren't allowed in the building, Right? Like,
yeah, no. My point was that if the lockout ends and then you start spring training.
Oh, got you. Okay, got you. So he would have to quickly find a home. You're right. Guys would be reporting to teams and Carlos would be sitting working out here in Houston or somewhere else. No, you're right. You're absolutely right.
It could come together really quickly. It's just worth noting that, look, it's not Carlos Correa might have three teams that really want to sign him, but it's just not going to happen until the lockout's over. So we're really you can't anticipate any kind of Carlos Correa news until you start to hear that, oh yeah, the two sides have come to an agreement and here we go. But it just, it's more of, there's a much greater likelihood now that Carlos Correa maybe isn't even on a team when the regular season begins.
Yeah.
If the lockout ends like the day before the regular season, they'd have to figure out some kind of truncated spring training schedule. There. It's all a mess, everybody. This is the important thing. Yeah. Everything sucks when there's work stoppages.
Right. Yeah, no, there would definitely be a spring training, so he'd have a little bit of cushion. But I think Atlanta's interesting because you bring up Freddie Freeman. So the teams Mark Berman tweeted out were the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Dodgers, the Cubs, and the Braves. I do wonder if the Braves being interested in Correa is maybe indicative of maybe they're not totally confident that Freddie Freeman is coming back. You know, that would be two big ticket free agents for a team like Atlanta, who's not normally considered a high payroll kind of team. So I wonder if, you know, if we're just reading the tea leaves, Seth, I wonder if interest in Carlos Correa in Atlanta is at all indicative. And plus, they seem pretty solidified in the infield. I mean, you know, Riley at third base and Dansby. I mean, Carlos Correa is a better player than Dansby Swanson, but he's an everyday shortstop, and they've got Ozzie Albies at second. Atlanta was a surprising one to me for a variety of reasons. That was the most surprising one. And then the Red Sox are one we've completely ignored because, a little like Atlanta, their infield seems to be kind of locked down and sewn up, especially at shortstop with Xander Bogaerts, but you could always move Bogaerts over to second. He's in the last year of his deal, and if we're going to talk about Correa and A.J. Hinch having a relationship, and that's why we thought the Tigers might have a really good chance, I don't think we can ignore the fact that Carlos Correa and Alex Cora are just as close as he is with A.J. Hinch in Boston. So Boston's an interesting one.
Yeah, too. Yeah, Boston is a very interesting one. Boston just had a trade they traded Hunter Renfro away. So
for Jackie Bradley, Jr., right?
Yeah.
So he's back with the Red Sox.
Jackie Bradley Jr. was gone for what, like 3 months?
Yeah, it feels like it. Yeah.
It's pretty much just last season, right? It was just last season that he was gone from so Jackie Bradley Jr. comes back with his Jake Mariznick type of offense, but his vacuum cleaner ability in the outfield.
Yep. So that's Correa's deal right now. There was some noise last night on Twitter, Seth, about Carlos Correa and his back, and there may be concern about his back. Our friend Michael Schwab, who he's got an Astros podcast, he talks to people, says that he says those reports are bogus, that he thinks it's the owners trying to drive the price on Carlos Correa down. I don't know. Here's the thing, and you tell me, Seth, you're the former athlete who suffered injuries before and had to negotiate contracts with teams and things like that. The back, I know Carlos has been healthy the last two seasons, like fully healthy, like played the whole year, the COVID year and this past year. A back, to me, feels like something that you've always got to be concerned is lurking around the corner, even if you put two healthy years together. Am I off base on that?
I don't think you're completely off base, but I think things have changed because there have been more success stories. The worry is that a guy's going to have chronic back issues and that it's going to be a Tracy McGrady type situation where, okay, that's it, and this is something he's always going to have to deal with. I think, think about Dwight Howard. Dwight Howard had his back surgery in 2012, and I think at the time the thought was, wow, you know, big man like that has back issues. That's pretty much it. They're done. And he ended up, he's still playing a decade later. He's obviously a different guy, but it was Dwight Howard's knees more than his back. As far as I can remember, I don't think he had any, did he have any back issues when he was here with the Rockets? I don't think he did. There was always that he just looked like he was running around on peg legs because his knees were so stiff. So I think with Carlos not having had those issues and he has a routine for how to handle them, I don't think that teams would be as concerned about it, other than it's just a knee-jerk, hey, back issues, that's a red alert. There have been a lot of guys that, once they get that red alert, figure out how to manage it and how to be on the right stretching routine and strengthening routine, and they end up being okay.
I'd love to know, we're talking about Carlos Correa still being a free agent as the lockout hit last night at around midnight Eastern time. The other thing I'd love to know, Seth, is, How does Carlos feel about his choice of representation right now? And he may feel fine about it. Teams may be reaching out to Carlos with deals that are in the range of what he wants, and we may not know it. But of all these marquee free agents, it feels like his news cycle has been the quietest one. For someone who was listed as either the number one or number two free agent, there's been almost no news about Carlos Correa. Like none, other than pictures of him having lunch with AJ Hinch. That's really been about it. And the reason I say that is because Corey Seager got the deal that we all assume Carlos Correa wants, 10 years, $300-plus million. Corey Seager's agent is Scott Boras. And, you know, Scott Boras, I'm sure, was out there flipping over every stone to get Corey Seager that deal. Meanwhile, there's been nothing with Correa. Like no news, no smoke. This Berman tweet last night is the closest thing I could find to any sort of news we've had on Correa. And we know that Correa signed with an agency that was not a baseball agency. It's like a Hollywood agency or something like that. I wonder a lot of things. There's no news on Correa, so I'm left here speculating on, God, I wonder if he feels this. I wonder if he feels that. Why is it so quiet? Are the Astros still talking to him? How far would the Astros go? The Seager deal made me think that. Like, I wonder if Carlos Correa looked at Corey Seager getting that deal and thought, man, maybe I should have gone with Boras or a more traditional baseball agent instead of this Hollywood guy.
Yeah, his agent's out there asking for a guaranteed number of clicks on social media.
Right.
And how many times can we have an in-house Twitch TV show or something for our client? Right. Yeah, it's a valid question, Sean.
Yeah. Pain.
I do wonder. It's whether you agree with whether teams should think this way or not. It doesn't matter what you think about how the way it should be. The fact of the matter is there are a lot of old school baseball people still in charge out there that I think kind of skeptical of new age baseball players that want to call attention to themselves, want to talk smack to other teams, want to talk smack about Derek Jeter. So when it comes to giving out like the huge 10-year marquee contract, I think there are still a lot of guys that want the boring, they want a boring Mike Trout or a boring, I say boring Derek Jeter, but you know what I'm saying, like a more traditional Derek Jeter than a new age Carlos Correa.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking, not to go too far off on a tangent, it's funny you say that. You know what I was thinking about that relative to football? I was watching a story, I think Vanessa Richardson did it on Channel 2 with Marcus Jones, the kid from U of H, the really good football player from U of H, cornerback, wide receiver, kick returner, you know, kind of a dark horse Heisman candidate. He's also very into music, very talented, into music, wants to make music as big a part of his brand and his life as football is. And I'm watching this and I'm going, I watch the interview and he's a very, very intelligent kid. He's very driven, obviously. He's a great football player. But as I'm watching that interview and him talking about him wanting to do the music and the football kind of in tandem with one another, like while he's in the NFL.
Yeah.
I put myself in the shoes of the Texans. I'm thinking, like, that's not a guy the Texans will draft right there. I mean, like, how many NFL teams in an interview like that, in a sit-down like that, how many NFL teams do you think watch that interview and go, we want our guy to be all football all the time?
That's 100% valid just because we've seen it so many times. I can remember having this conversation with Jason Babin when he was a rookie because he had all these ideas for things he wanted to do, you know, and I was just like, hey, man, listen, like, focus on the main thing. Like, you gotta prove yourself as an NFL player. Then all that other stuff can come later on. And I think it took Babin a couple of years to realize that. Unfortunately, it didn't happen while he was still with the Texans.
Right.
But he became a very, very productive player after that. But, yeah, people think about that stuff when it comes to, especially first-round picks in football, I think, is that when you hand over somebody that much money, you want to be sure that there's somebody that's not going to get distracted too easily, that they are focused on football primarily. You can have your outside interests. You know, Braxton Miller was another guy that I know a few teams had taken off their draft board just because they felt like he was just way too concerned with living the life of an NFL player more so than actually being an NFL player. Michael Lombardi said the Patriots had taken him off the board completely.
Yeah, if you were giving advice to Marcus Jones, would you have told him, don't sit down and do interviews where you talk about this, where you talk about your music career? I mean, does it damage his draft stock?
Yeah, I would if I were his agent, I'd be like, yeah, just hold up, Egg. It's cool that you want to do it at all and everything. And it's not like some guy. I mean, guys can do it.
Yeah.
But it's not going to help you.
Right.
There's no team in the league that's going to say that's going to say, oh, thank God he's got other aspirations outside of football. We can help him become a multimedia mogul. Yes, let's do this.
Right. Payne and Pendergast with you.
One of our listeners asked, so I'm confused as to Carlos being the number one free agent in the league. Why hasn't Carlos gotten any offers? All these guys going before him. How does that make sense? The biggest, I guess my first answer to that, just in general, would be that baseball's different than football. In football, there's this frenzy at the very beginning, and the big guys are off the board very, very quickly. In baseball, it takes time. You know, Brett, you mentioned yesterday, when did Bryce Harper sign? Was it not until February or March?
It was like March. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and I don't know. There's less of a feeling of pent-up fervor the way there is in football. I think part of it is because the salary cap isn't as big of a factor. I think because you're more in it for the long haul in baseball. In football, you're hoping to extract the maximum value out of that guy over the course of 3 years, and it's more of a short-term view. With baseball, they want to be sure, if we're talking about a 10-year contract, that they're going to get the fit right. So I don't think it's clear that Carlos hasn't been made offers. They're just in that stage where they're probably discussing with other teams general guidelines, expectations, stuff like that. Maybe offers have been made, maybe preliminary offers have been made, but it's a slower process in baseball.
Yeah, and I think there tends to be more of a frenzy in sports that have salary caps than ones that don't. I mean, the baseball's got a luxury tax, which is a bit of a soft cap kind of function, but salary cap sports
and very few teams actually, yeah, very few teams even spend up to the luxury.
That's right. That's right. So I think there's a dynamic there with that. February 28th, 2019 is when Bryce Harper signed. So the last day of February is when he signed. So yeah, sometimes these big free agents, it takes a little bit longer. So we'll see where things land with Carlos. Seth, I guess if someone were to pull us aside at a bar or restaurant somewhere and said, hey, explain why there's a lockout right now in baseball. Like, if we had to explain it in like 30 to 60 seconds, I think it's really hard to do for one thing, but if we were trying to keep it as radio friendly as possible, it's always about money. The players, I would say that the players want there to be a chance for them to hit free agency earlier. They want higher minimum salaries. I think they're trying to address that. They're also trying to address the playoff format, an expanded playoff, a universal DH. If we're putting the laundry list together, I think those are the big sticking point ultimately is going to be, and it always is, free agency. Players want to get paid more sooner. That's always the big thing.
Yeah. In baseball especially, it's the sooner part because like all the analytics now show that players, for the most part, hit their physical peak and prime when they're 27, 28 years old. And then after that, and there are exceptions to the rule, obviously, but for the most part, that's when guys are at their very best. So there's either a plateau or a steady decline after that. Guys might still be very good, but on average, they end up being not quite as good. So it creates this situation where by the time guys go through 6 years of service time, they're 28 years old for the first time they're a free agent, and they're already over the hill, so to speak. So the players feel like they're not getting their maximum value because teams aren't going to pay for guys that, on average, aren't going to be as good as they were in this 1-2-3 year window. They'd like to figure out a way to get that earlier.
Yeah.
And I could see where owners are thinking, like, yeah, this is a pretty good deal we've got. We get the absolute best out of players, or at least 50% of the absolute best out of them, while they're just playing under either the rookie deals or arbitration deals or whatever it is. And if I put myself in those shoes as a player, I've always been astounded how long baseball players have to wait until they get to free agency.
Yeah.
You know, football, you're 26 years old usually on average, 25 maybe sometimes, and you've still got a few of your peak years ahead of you. Baseball, it's just different.
Well, and the poster child for that here, if we want to localize that angle, is George Springer. you know, George Springer had his service time manipulated. He didn't hit the big leagues till he was like 24 or 25 years old, even though he probably deserved to be up here. Clearly, he was, at the time he got called up, he was one of the best players in the system, even when he was like in double A. I mean, the Astros were trash back then. And then by the time he hits free agency, he's bordering, he's 31, 32 years old. So what they're trying to do is get, for those older guys like Springer, that come into the league, come into the big leagues at a more advanced age, they're trying to get free agency tied to some combination of service time and age. You know, like whichever one hits first kind of thing. And so if you want to play the sort of mock free agency game, what would have happened with Springer if he were playing for the Astros under what the players and the owners are looking at doing? He would have been a free agent, I think, at least a year earlier. Like, he would not have been here in 2020 if Springer wouldn't have.
And that is one of the things, by the way, that one of the first really polarizing things the Astros did that's now become, you know, commonplace, but was messing with George Springer's service time and delaying guys just long enough to where they'd get an extra year of arbitration-controlled salary out of them instead of bringing them up when they genuinely were ready for Major League service. And I don't know. It's not even really a loophole. It was just the Astros maximizing everything that the CBA allowed them to do. But a lot of players looked at that as dirty pool or just not within the spirit of, you know, good faith agreements between players and the teams. And that's really probably a lot of, you know, whether you love it or hate it, that's where a lot of the acrimony started that exists right now between the analytical side of the game and the player's side.
Yep. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday. All right, let's circle back to the Texans. David Culley has come under a lot of scrutiny and criticism over the last several weeks, and due in no small part to some of his game management decisions. Believe it or not, the stats are in front of me right here. I'm looking at them. Something David Culley ranks in the top 10 among NFL head coaches in. Next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.